Charlo says he wants to be the king of the jungle.
There's no way you can tame a lion.
And that's me.
And that's me. The power is for real. And the entire sport of boxing is hearing Charlo's roar.
What?
He is the king of this jungle.
Jermall Charlo versus Dennis Hogan for the middleweight championship on Showtime.
Picture this. Late night. I'm riding down a dark street. And it's two naked chicks. Right? It's two naked chicks. Running down the street. One is the ex-Miss Universe. The other is ex-Miss America. It's a dark night. They're running down the street naked. I don't know why I'm down the street, but I was smoking and I made a wrong turn. I stopped and they brought, can you help us, help us? I'm like, fuck yeah, I help y'all. Y'all naked? Y'all big ass titties and shit? Get in. I get to start the drive and I get the accident, like, what the fuck y'all running from? You know, because, you know, you see motherfuckers running, you just start running too. So I just hit the gas, you know, but it's hard for me to not think that these motherfuckers are naked in the back seat, right? So while I'm driving, I'm getting the boner, right? So I'm trying to focus, you know, so I don't know what they running from. All I'm thinking now is I'm getting laid, okay? Damn what they running from. Damn who gonna kill us. At least I'm gonna get one off when we die, right? So that's how y'all want me to paint the story, like that?
Oh, that's what you was painting the picture, yeah. Right there.
Oh my goodness, dog.
We could have started the show with that shit. If that's the case.
I was in character right there, dog.
Episode 7. All the smoke. Welcome back.
Siete.
My brethren in mine.
What's up, my brother?
This episode, we're going to go in depth into me and Jack's crazy journey through the NBA, tell some personal stories, some ups, some downs, and hope you guys enjoy it.
That's right.
So today we're going to talk about the last of a dying breed, which was trash talking in the NBA. Me and Jack caught the end of it. We missed the greats like Gary Payton and guys like that that really got in your face and really talked shit. Jack liked to talk shit. He got a big mouth. He liked to talk. I wasn't really someone that talked. I kind of was a retaliator. But you got a dope story about you and Kobe going at it and how your team ended their quest for a four-peat.
I was known to trash talk. You know, that's one of my best assets, because 9 out of 10 times, a guy ain't going to fight in the game. Okay? They don't want to fight. But all y'all that watch NBA games, half of them guys do it for TV. They wouldn't throw a punch or wouldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight. Okay? So do not think they want to fight. It's all for TV. So I knew that at times, and you know what I'm saying? I really pushed the envelope, because I knew I was ready to go, but I knew they wasn't. So sometimes that got me 8 to 10 points just punking a motherfucker. You know what I'm saying?
We used to punk motherfuckers that we believed to.
That's a part of the game.
We punked Dallas.
If we see that you're scared, we're going to take advantage of it, right?
Blood
so
water.
I used to do that to a lot of people, and I was always talking shit. I even won the Trash Talk Award, the Big Three, which was nothing. But I remember, you know, playing against Kobe, man. Kobe used to talk trash, but it's hard to kind of go back and forth with him, not only because he shoot a lot, but he making the motherfuckers.
He's a bad motherfucker.
And you don't get that many attempts.
No, not even close.
So I finally got a post up on him. You know what I mean? I got the ball on the post. I'm backing him down. You know, I'm looking at him like, I'm a little nigga. And I'm finna, you know, that's how I'm looking at him. Hit him with the shoulder. I turn around and shoot it. He just, wow, whole arm off, right? The referee, I'm on the baseline. The referee right there. So I turn and look at the referee. Kobe takes off with the ball. I'm like, what the fuck? So I'm talking to the referee, arguing with him. And as I'm talking to the ref, Kobe is saying something to me. Like, you better pay attention. Like, you know what I'm saying? Fuck all that. Because I start saying something to Kobe, too, about hacking ass. You know what I'm saying? So as I'm talking to the referee, Kobe shoots like 10 feet from the three-point line. Net. And gives me a little smirk. Like, look at me. And then the referee look at me like, he on Kobe's side, you know what I'm saying? Kobe just run down the court, just talking to me like I'm a kid, and next thing you know, Pop just subbed me out the game. So I'm on the sideline looking like I was just a bump, you know what I mean? Like, Kobe, one thing about Kobe, he gonna talk to you, and he gonna get every shot. And you're not gonna get the same amount of attempts
not
as him.
Even close.
You know what I mean?
Not even
so
close.
Kobe was, people don't know, Kobe talk a lot of trash, bro.
Yeah.
It might not be curse words, it might be nothing like that, but it's just what he gonna do to you. And he'll tell you before he do it.
And he'll still do it.
He'll still do
it. Nothing you can do to stop it. I mean, my shit, too, was our shit was a little bit of back and forth talking that situation in Orlando with the ball fake, but it was more the grabbing, the elbowing. I caught a tip dunk that he tried to block Dwight's shot, and he left me open, and I went and tip junked, and I was coming off the rim, and motherfucker tried to elbow me on my nuts. So it just came to a point, like you said, where he fouled you right in front of the refs, and the refs act like they motherfucking Ray Charles at the time. Like, bitch, you know you motherfucking saw that.
Exactly.
Right? So it came to a point in Orlando where he was doing all this dirty shit, and I would get caught retaliating. So I got a couple fouls. I got one T. But it's bullshit, like you said, because you got to do everything you can to stop him, knowing goddamn well. I know in my situation, he took like 30 shots that game. You know what I mean? Like, motherfucker, it takes me six games to get 30 shots. You know what I mean? So it was tough. But battling him is always fun. But I used to tell people guarding him, he tries to mentally fuck you too, because physically, you know, there's nothing much you can do with him. But he tries to get that mental battle too, whether it's talking shit, elbowing you, grabbing you. You know, the pump faking you 18 times, and then you jump, and he barely slides against you, and the ref calls a foul. So it was a motherfucking battle, just like I said. But that was my favorite. Whenever I played, I was just like, hell yeah, I get to play Kobe tonight. You know what I mean? And my whole thing is, you're not going to start great offense with good defense regardless. You just want to make them work for everything.
Make it difficult on them.
Make them work. You know, no easy layups. You go to the basket, I'm going to foul the shit. I'm not giving you no easy layups. I'm going to make you work for everything. And if you end up having 30 points, I want you to take 30 shots.
You remember when Golden State, when me and him was going back-to-back in threes? Uh-huh.
Y'all was going at it.
Winning the game.
We beat him.
Yeah. He was talking to him. Was looking like, man, come on. He was hitting some crazy shots at the end of that game.
Sick. Dog. So you briefly touched on it. I mean, amongst that shit talking and back and forth between you and Kobe, you guys ended their streak for four in a row in San Antonio. Yeah. That's when you got your first ring.
Yeah, I mean, it was a dominant team. Nobody wanted to play the Lakers. They had been dominant over the Spurs. Definitely. Tim and Dave couldn't get over that hump. I know they won that bullshit championship in 99. The Spurs did, but
with the shortened season.
Yeah, that shortened season. But the Lakers, they couldn't get past the Lakers. Mm-hmm. That year, it was basically guaranteed that they was going to win again. We had kind of struggled with them during the regular season because Kobe and Shaq were just a little bit too much. But I think Tim had it in his mind.
No matter what.
No matter who was on the court, I'm finna be the best player from game one. I think the first game he had like a 20-20. Like that was his standard the whole series. And he made it a point to guard Shaq to the point where he was playing so well, Kevin Willis was coming off the bench getting tip dunks and, you know, blocking Shaq's shot. You know, so I think just having Tim Duncan and where his mind was, that was the only reason we was able to stop their four-peat, you know, and to see Kobe and Shaq and them over there crying and, you know, Derek Fisher and them over there crying. It was a good feeling, bro, because that was my first year that I actually felt like I was in the league, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like I belonged. Dope. And I had, and you know, being on a chance to win a championship, that was special to stop them too.
That's what's up. But, you know, it was crazy for me because I'd always battle Kobe, you know, even dating back to when he first came to L.A., he used to come up to UCLA and play and work out.
With him, though.
You know what I mean? But then to be able to, you know, have someone that I looked up to so much and loved competing against, competing with, it was amazing. And my first year there was we were going for their second three-peat. But I ended up tearing my meniscus, I want to say in February, I think that year. And that's the year that we got swept by Dallas, and I think Dallas beat Miami in the finals. But like I said, getting a chance to play with him and seeing his day in, day out preparation, how hard he worked on his game, getting up in the morning and hitting the track and the weights, and I mean like it's still dark outside type shit. Like he was just, I say like an evil genius. You know what I mean? Like a beautiful mind. Like he was so obsessed with being the best, but he put the work in too. So it was just amazing to be able to, you know, say that I battled to me against the second greatest player of all time. And then I was actually a teammate with them for a little while too. That shit was dope, man. Like I said, I learned a lot. He wasn't someone who was a vocal, he was the leader, but he wasn't one of those yelling all the time vocal leader. It was a situation when he spoke, you listened, and then he would just give you that motherfucking look. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or that you got to pass to him when he gives you his little Mamba hiss, mm-hmm. like, you know, he's open. But it was just, you know, lead by example. If your best player is going to go out there every single night and leave it all out there, there's no excuse for no one else not to.
I didn't get a chance to play with him, but I got a chance to play with him in the McDonald's All-American game in 96.
Early on.
And just his presence was like it is now.
It's a different energy.
When he walked in practice as a 17, 18-year-old, when he walked in practice, we all felt it. Like he was the next thing, the next mm-hmm. big thing, you know? And he was that good, but it was just, I was excited to be on this team in the McDonald's game because I knew how, you know, the ceiling they had for him and shit, he reached all those expectations.
Mm-hmm. Hell of a run, man.
So, we talking about experiences, you know, and the game and our experiences in our history of the game. And talk about being on the wrong side of history. You were a part of a team that everybody thought was going to be a championship team. Even, you know, guys that was in the league that played against y'all just knew y'all was on y'all way to a championship. Y'all were real close. Y'all were up 3-1 against the Rockets. And everything went downhill with the team y'all had.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
That was an interesting series. That was our Lob City team. Very talented team, but for some reason or another, we just couldn't get over the hump. But we really felt like this 2015 season was the year. We beat San Antonio in a crazy back-and-forth seven-game series.
Who was just the roster?
Our roster, so who was it? It was CP, JJ, me, Blake, DJ. We had Big Baby off the bench. Reigning six man, Jamal Crawford, Hedo Turkoglu, Spencer Haas.
Well, how did y'all fuck up the church money?
I don't know, man. But it was back to that, I think it was game five. We were up a lot, and they benched James. So we're thinking, shit, okay, we're done. We're about to play the Warriors in the next round. But all of a sudden, their bench, led by Josh Smith, beat the fucking brakes off us. Just hitting threes, transition. They completely snatched the air out of Staples Center.
Jace moving crazy on y'all?
Crazy on us. Hitting threes, dunking. He just led the bench. Like I said, they had benched James. So mm-hmm. we figured, okay, you know, I can't wait. We're going home to play Golden State to see who goes to the finals. And they came back, beat us in that game. Game five, game six, and game seven. We didn't stand a chance.
Really?
They just... They handed it to us, and
like what changed? Like,
I don't know. Just that big word, momentum. It was just the momentum shift, and it was almost like there was nothing to do, nothing we could do to get it back. Game seven, they closed it out.
Well, they were beating y'all. Y'all was up 3-1.
Yeah,
they came back.
They came back and swept us. I mean, basically, we were up 3-1 and got swept, which was crazy too, because that's the year Golden State won their first championship. But if you take it back the year before that, 2014, we were the last team to knock them out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We knew they were going to be something to reckon with. We just, you know, still thought we had the upper hand on them. So everyone was expecting that Clippers, Golden State, Western Conference Finals. And, you know, the winner was going to play LeBron.
Houston took them there, too.
They battled. They definitely battled. You know what I mean? But, you know, Golden State got over the hump. And then, you know, that was the beginning of their run. But definitely just a missed opportunity with that Lob City team as a whole.
What was the locker room like afterwards? Walking in the locker room. I know everybody was
dead.
Sick.
Sick, dead.
Lost your dog.
It was tough,
your girlfriend,
man.
Found your bat phone.
Ooh,
that feeling.
That's a horrible
Ooh,
feeling.
Ooh, that's, man, I'm
that's
talking
like
about.
That's like when you see the lights in your rear view from the cop and your motherfucking stomach just goes to the bottom of your stomach.
And you just put the blood heart out so you can't. Oh, man. That's a hell of a feeling, bro.
I had to swallow one time. It wasn't that big, uh-huh. but had to.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an edible. It's just rolled edible.
It tasted disgusting.
Yeah, it tasted not horrible. The same.
But anyway, yeah, like I said, it was just a missed opportunity for that team. We felt like we had so much talent, but I just really feel our weakness, our kryptonite was ourselves. You know, we kept getting in our way. You know, some guys butted heads and the chemistry wasn't what it should be, but when the chemistry was on, it was magical. But what's crazy, what tripped me out about that team is we were so close off the court. Like, we all kicked
You don't think
it.
Having a coach's son on the team had anything to do with it?
I mean, that was an interesting experience.
Dynamic.
To have him come to the team. But he played well for us, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
He played well for us in the playoffs. I think it was a little interesting for him to get there, you know what I mean, for a father-son dynamic, because I know a lot of us on the team were pulling for Nate Robinson to get signed. And they ultimately, you know, wanted to
Well, at that
Austin.
Time, if you weigh...
No, Austin was already on the team, but we were trying to get Nate because...
But I'm saying as players, if you look at them, Nate, come on, Nate by far.
But like I said, Austin came in and played well, and I kind of think that's when he put himself on the map. But I definitely think if there was a little bit of awkwardness when he first came. But, you know, with any situation, I'm sure a father-son would be awkward.
Like, as much as I love my son, I wouldn't say I wouldn't give him an opportunity, but I would rather him earn it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Austin didn't deserve to be in the NBA. What I'm saying is I know his daddy gave him his big contract, so... You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying if I was in that position, I probably would too, but I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't want to have my players look at me a different way, think I'm sure I'm doing, you know, it's about winning.
Keep it 100. There was some awkwardness, you know what I mean? And that's back when, you know, Doc had a lot of the power. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I
want to
say, if I'm not mistaken, he was like president, GM, and head coach. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's a lot of different hats to wear. And
fuck it, I'm going to sign my son. 30 million. Come on, boy. You ain't got to be
and
good.
And that was really kind of the unrattling of that team. You know what I mean? I got into him with it that season. So I was motherfucking traded at 12:01 in the a.m. East Coast time. I was the first trade.
East Coast time.
You know, and then the pieces just started falling. I think JJ left next. Then Jamal left.
JJ's so fucking cool, man.
JJ's cool. JJ was someone I didn't like until I played with him. Then I love JJ.
He's the reason. Did I tell you this? He's the reason why I got rid of all my iced out watches.
Was he?
Because he came in there one day with a watch, just plain looking watch, and it was the
crazy
one expensive. Of the most expensive watches, one of the most nicest watches ever. Mm-hmm. And he told me what my watch was really worth. I stopped wearing iced out watches.
He respectfully just shit on your watch?
Shut me down. Laughing at me, you know what I'm saying, but giving me game at the same time. Shout out JJ.
You know, JJ's cool as shit, but I just think there was, you know, and when I talked to guys on their way out, you know, there was just a lot of grumbling. And I think it had a lot to do with all the hats Doc was wearing. But I think that's where, you know, they're back on top now with the chance to win a championship. And I think it's good because now they have management in place and GMs in place and presidents in place. And Doc can do what he does best. Mm-hmm. Doc is a great coach.
He got some hell of assistant coaches around him,
great
too.
Great supporting cast, but just a great motivator. You know, a coach that's been a player and had a successful career as a player, so he understands us and understands what's more important. And he understands that the games are more important than practice. And he really caters to his guys, and he's big on sleep. So.
Doc wasn't no punk either. Doc knocked some people out.
Doc would throw hands.
Yeah, Doc would hands. Shout out Doc, man.
Yeah.
Hands.
So,
you got hands?
But definitely just a missed opportunity, I feel. That was like kind of my one, damn, what the fuck were we thinking? Like when I look back on my career, there's no way that we shouldn't have won at least one championship with that team.
Yeah.
So round two, your second go around with the Spurs. First one, you win a championship. Contract negotiations don't go how you want them to go. You choose to keep it pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Get traded back there in 2012 from Milwaukee. Up 2-1. We up 2-1 against OKC or
3-0.
Up 2-0 against OKC. Let you tell it. Tony Parker was going for MVP.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things was going smooth. We were playing together. First two games of that series, we're in San Antonio. We go up 2-0. Everybody's happy. I think me and Kawhi were playing decent defense on KD and James. You know, we were kind of holding them down. Shit just went south. We get to game three. And Tony Parker basically stopped trusting us. He was making real late passes. And give James Harden credit. He just turned it up. He went crazy. You know, he went crazy in some games. And, you know, KD was solid. KD was the best player, you know, on the floor almost every night. But we took him to game six. After they won three in a row, we in game six. And you can listen to the announcers. Tony Parker had Steven Jackson wide open. Tony Parker missed Steven Jackson again. Like, it's so obvious during the course of the year, you hear announcers say this. Like, I knew it. But people didn't want to address Tony looking me off.
So, I mean, what happened? You know what I mean? What was the disconnect with Tony?
Well, I just think he became real selfish. You know, Tim was slowing down. He felt like he had to do more.
Okay.
But that wasn't the case. Ginobili was still good. You had Kawhi coming into his own. Mm-hmm. I was still able to knock down shots. So I think he stopped trusting us.
That's big.
You know, I even remember after game six, I'm sitting on the floor, me and Kawhi sitting side by side, and Tim came put his hand on both of us because, you know, we played our ass off. And they know that Tony was forcing shit. And I can show you on film. You know what I'm saying? It's documented. But I remember sitting in the locker room, and Pop came in the locker room and put his hand on my shoulder when me and Kawhi were sitting right there. He was like, we did everything we could. We just didn't trust each other. He didn't want to say, Tony didn't trust us. You know what I'm saying? Right. But we all knew when he said that, we all knew.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I could have had another championship.
Mm.
I could have had another championship, man. That year, we was two games away from making it to the finals, and we was going to win that shit.
So OKC eventually lost to Miami, right?
In the finals, yeah.
Okay. So following season, 2013, 55 games in the season right before.
Really not playing. He throwing me in their garbage minutes and, you know, throwing me in and out, you know. And what people don't know, Matt, and you know this, and they was doing this to Carmelo. I'm not saying I'm on Carmelo level. But scores and guys that play off rhythm and stuff, you can't throw them in 4 minutes in the third quarter and expect them to do an instant spark. You can't throw them in 2 minutes in the fourth quarter and expect them to throw an instant spark, like always be ready and expect them to come out and play well. That's the situations they throw you in to make you look like you can't play. This is what they did Melo and got him out the way. So Pop was doing that to me the whole season. You know, he'll throw me in there, you know, I'll never know when I'm a play, you know, and it was different from the year before. You know, I just came off playing well in the finals, in the Western Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. So he was doing that all year, and I didn't understand, you know, why I wasn't just getting the opportunity to play. I was playing great in practice. I was busting my teammates' ass in practice. You know what I'm saying? You can ask Kawhi, they'll tell you. I had no reason not to be playing. The way he was playing me and the Spurs he was playing me, I couldn't play my best basketball because I'm a rhythm guy.
Timing.
You know what I mean? And it didn't look good for a while.
Who were you playing behind at the time? That was a young Kawhi.
Danny Green. Yep, and Ginobili.
Ginobili. So you're back in Oklahoma.
I'm playing behind all them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember you hit me on the bus. We was in New Orleans, and I seen you had just got released. I'm like, what the fuck? Right before the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, that shit was crazy, man. I remember coming out of practice. I had a great practice. You know how I practice. Mm-hmm. If I hit a three on somebody, bitch, you know what I'm saying? But it ain't personal. You know what I'm saying? Get your ass up. That's how I'm talking.
Right.
I'm probably the only person in Spurs history that practiced like that. You know what I'm saying? Maybe Mario Elliott or somebody like that. You know what I'm saying? But I'm the only one in Spurs history that practiced like that. Tim loved it. Tim Duncan loved it. He loved the way I played and all that. You know what I'm saying? It scared people at the time. We had a point guard on the team. His last name was DiColo. He loved me. You know what I mean? But I hit a shot on him for game one at practice. And I'm like, get up, bitch. And Pop, like, I saw it. He didn't say nothing, but I saw his face like, come on, Jack. Like, but this is just how I play. I wasn't playing much, so my games was practices.
Practice, right.
You know what I mean? And this is just how I played. So I'm walking in the locker room. You know, I remember I'm having a great time. I'm feeling good. You know, Tim coming up, messing with me, like, great practice, boy, da, da. And as I'm in the locker room, one of the trainers come, like, Pop, want to talk to you in the film room.
That's like getting called to the principal's office.
But I'm not feeling that. I'm thinking he's going to tell me, great practice, you know, I'm going to play you, da-da-da-da, like, get your shit together, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's what I'm thinking.
Right.
I go in there. As soon as I go in, I see his face. Killed my whole mood. I want to just kick him in his fucking face. When I saw his face, I just wanted to kick the shit out of him because I know this is not going to go how I expect to. You know, I expect it to. I sit down. He hit play on the film screen. He got all the highlights of me fucking up in the last 3 to 4 games. My worst possessions. Jack, you're not playing
with. This is where you said he was throwing you in and out and you didn't have no rhythm.
He found my worst possessions in life. He probably found him when I was 4 years old, the worst possessions ever, and played him on the tape for me. And was like, Jack, you haven't been playing well, duh-duh-duh. I know you had a great practice today. I want to bring Danny Green and the Ginobili and the rest of these guys in, and I want you to admit that these guys are better than you because I'm going to play them going into the playoffs.
He brought them in the office?
No, he brought me in there and told me he was going to bring them in there for me to say that. This one thing about Pop, the smartest coach I've ever played for. He's calculated. Everything he does is calculated. I know this guy. I respect him too much. You know what I mean? I can never say nothing bad about him. He gave me my opportunity to win all that stuff. I love Pop. He was like a father to me those years I was in San Antonio. But he knew what my response was going to be before he asked me that question.
Mm-hmm.
So when he told me that he was going to bring the team in, he wanted me to admit that Danny Green and Ginobili was better than me in front of the whole team to help their confidence going to the playoffs, I looked at him. I said, Pop, you know I ain't going to say that. You might as well give me the rest of my money. I'm getting the fuck up out of here. And I got up and walked out. Now, listen, I got up and walked out. As I walked out, Tim, I see Tim on the table. He was like, Jack, what's going on? I'm like, man, don't even worry about it. I'll holler at you later. You know what I'm saying? As I walk out. So this is how I always say, I know how smart Pop is, and I know that everything he does is calculated. As I'm at home going to the house, I get a call from T-Mac. T-Mac flying in town, asking me, well, what's going on? He flying in. San Antonio flying him in. He coming in right now. So they had already was bringing T-Mac in. So he was trying to set up a way
for you to let me down easy.
So he wanted me to set myself up by saying that in front of the team.
To cut yourself.
Right. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, Pop knew the relationship we had. He had so much love for me. He couldn't come to terms with just saying, Jack, I got to release you. You know what I'm saying? I don't think... The relationship we have, I don't think he wanted to do that. And that's why he put me in that position.
To cut yourself.
Because he knew I was going to cut myself. Fuck no, I ain't saying, I'm not to this day. Deontay Wilder, till this day, I ain't saying nobody better than me. You got to prove it. You know what I'm saying? And it ended bad. It ended bad. And they end up losing to Miami. That's good for their ass. Because I would have got that rebound. You know what I'm saying? And the way I feel about Ray Allen, I would have made sure I locked his ass up. You know what I mean? So, but you know, shit happened for a reason. I don't even think they played, really gave T-Mac a chance to see what he can do.
I remember that. He was in and out briefly.
But it was fucked up, you know what I'm saying? Because I was, and then he did that where I couldn't sign with another NBA team.
Oh, yeah, no.
You know, right before the playoffs where I could. So he didn't want me to come back to hunt him. And I don't blame him because that was what was going to happen. I was going to come back and bust his ass. And he knew that, you know what I mean? But it was just fucked up how it happened. And I never played in the NBA after that.
It's a cold business because the business of the business behind the scenes is dirty. You know what I mean? And then it almost, without knowing the whole story, you know, Pop is what he is. You know, going to be arguably one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest coaches ever. So if you can't make it work with Pop, people really start thinking you're a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So then, like you said, after that, you never play in the NBA again.
Yep, that little bullshit thing with a couple weeks with the Clippers, and that was it. But anytime you get cut right before the playoffs, that looks bad to every team. You know what I'm saying? That looks bad to every team. And to be cut from the Spurs right before the playoffs, you know what I'm saying? And I think, Matt, that's what hurt me more than anything. The relationship me and Pop had, like, as smart as he is, this is ruining me, Pop. Like, regardless how you feel about me or what you're trying to do to win games,
this is
fucking up my career. You know what I mean? I don't think he never thought about that. You know what I'm saying? But I heard somebody ask him about it, and he said he regret how he handled that. You know what I'm saying? Which I respect because, you know, I had a lot of game left. You know, I had to go punish the big three the next couple of years because, if Pop say you don't belong in the league, trust me, a lot of teams going to be like, you don't belong in the league.
It's tough. Tough way to go out. For my career, I mean, we've had, like I said, very similar paths. I bounced around until I really felt like, you know, there was one particular situation where I felt like, okay, damn, I've arrived. I'm an NBA player. I'm here to stay. You touched on that early on in your run for the finals with San Antonio the first time in 2003. What was that moment where you felt like, okay, fuck, I'm here now. I'm here to stay. Let's set up shop.
When we landed in Seattle, I had my family. A big part of my family lives in Seattle. And they had
not to cut you off, I missed the NBA's nonsense. I used to love Seattle.
But remember, did we play in Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
You remember my family restaurant, Catfish Corner, that I took the team to?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that day was my first time meeting my family when I was playing with San Antonio in the NBA, and I had them come to the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was having them come to the game, so I brought the whole team there. David Robinson, we went 8 the day before the game.
That's dope.
The 2 weeks before that, I've been playing well. I was coming off the bench. I was playing well. I was averaging like, 16, 17 off the bench. And Pop was starting to play me more and more and more. This is one reason why I love Pop, because this opportunity that he gave me. We go to shoot around, and we go back to the hotel after shoot around, and Pop calls me up to his room. You know, it's the principal office feeling. I had went out the night before and got into some shit with Rashard Lewis. Well, we end up getting into a little fight at the club, and it never hit the media. Shout out to Rashard Lewis. We did some crazy shit night.
That's free social media, though.
Hey,
social media. 03. Hey,
no, listen. If social media was there, the shit we did that night, we was in jail. Easy. We was in jail. We was squabbing that night. So I'm automatically thinking this thing came out. Right? So
that's what you think when you had
I didn't hear that in that shoot around, but when I go, you know, when I get back to my room, he called me to his room. So this is automatically what I'm thinking about. I get to his room, Tim in there. So I'm like, oh shit. But Tim whole vibe was, you know, Wolfpack, all his shit he be doing. Cause you know, we played paintball together. We had a team called with the Wolfpack. So he doing his little Wolfpack shit. So that kind of, you know, helped me out a little bit. So when I sit down, Pop like, you didn't do nothing wrong. Cause I'm sitting there like, fuck.
We always feel guilty.
What?
I didn't mean that. I was just black, man. We feel guilty all the time.
Fuck. You know what I mean? Motherfuckers ask me why I don't skate. Cause shit, I've been skating on thin ice my whole life. You know what I'm saying? But I sit down, probably like, Jackie, all right. You know, you didn't do nothing. He's like, you've been playing well. I talked to Tim. I think it's time that we start you. We're gonna put you in the starting lineup.
Who was starting at the time?
Steve Smith. OG Steve Smith. And at the time, he was my big brother. Like, he was everything to me on that team, taught me everything. He showed me how to get loose for the game, how to dress, wear suits, how to be a professional, everything about it, how to pregame, everything. He taught me everything. And him and his wife at the time, you know, that was my third year in the league, so him and his wife were like my big brother and big sister. They used to invite me over to cook for me and all kind of stuff, make sure I had stuff at the house. When he told me that, I was excited, but my whole time thinking, damn, how I'm going to tell the OG that, you know what I'm saying, I done took his spot. That's not my intentions, But I'm, you know, I'm just trying to play. I'm just trying to hoop. So when he tell me that, it's a bittersweet feeling. So I'm excited. But when I get to the game, you know, we're talking about feeling like I belong. When I get to the game, I walk in the locker room, and I see Steve Smith. And our locker's right by each other all the time. And I'm trying to sneak by him. So, because I don't want to address it. You know what I'm saying? And he felt it.
Right.
Because normally I'm in the OG, what's up? You know what I'm saying? So as I was sneaking by him, he turned around like, he's like, young fella, as we call him, you know, like, young fella, this ain't personal between me and you.
That's dope.
Go out there, do what you've been doing. This ain't personal between you. We know what's going on. I'm rooting for you. I'm your biggest fan, just like you've been mine. That gave me the feeling like I belong, okay? You know what I'm saying? Like, now I'm finna start.
Especially someone like Steve Smith.
You gave me the okay.
Mm-hmm.
I belong, telling me, he's like, you've been playing well. You deserve to be starting.
Mm-hmm.
That moment, you know what I'm saying? Okay, I belong here. You know
That's
what I'm saying?
That's what's up.
And I owe that to Steve Smith.
That's what's up. My situation was, I mean, I bounced around team to team, didn't get a chance to really play.
Do you remember how many teams you tried out for before you got a job?
Two. Oh, it was only two. I didn't get my second round draft pick,
mm-hmm.
drafted, traded draft day. So I'm traded. I drafted to Memphis, traded to Cleveland. John Lucas was head coach. Didn't even get a chance. Cut early on in the process. Go to the D League for the whole year. Grind. Run into another coach's son's position. I get hurt. The coach's son takes my spot. So then I'm spotting playing in the D League. So
coach's
I'm like, fucked
son.
It. I'm not doing the D League shit again. So then I go to this ABA. We're playing motherfucking games in Mexico and all kinds of shit. And that's when I actually played with Dennis Rodman for like 2 weeks.
How was that?
I only got to play with him for 2 weeks.
That's another story.
I didn't get a chance to fuck with bro like I wanted to, but then I get called up to the Clippers, have a cool little run, start playing on a 10-day, get 2 10-day, I'm signed. But this is right at the beginning when Sacramento and the Kings, Sacramento Kings versus the Lakers is like a big rivalry. So I'm always going home in the summer fucking with C-Webb and Jay Will and working out with these dudes. So I'm just like, fuck. I would be working out at Arco the whole summer, and then Rick Adams is like, you know, what do you got going on? Just like, it's kind of up in the air. I knew we were talking to going back to the Clippers for a 2-year deal, but I was like, shit, if I can go home and play with my hometown team, why they're dope, it's a no-brainer. So I end up signing a deal in SAC. Season doesn't start off the way it's supposed to. They ended up trading Chris Webber, and I was just a throw-in. So I go with Webb to Philly. 2.5 years, don't really get a chance to play. It's when I run into punk-ass Mo Cheeks and have all this built-up fire and hostility just because I haven't got a chance to play. I think there's so many people that just don't get a chance to play and they get washed out the league. So mm-hmm. I'm coming into the 2006 season, working out for football in the summertime because my brother played football, still working out basketball, but like, fuck it, I'm going to try to make a jump to the NFL. We had lined up some NFL tryouts for me if this basketball thing didn't work. Then Baron Davis hits me. Like, yo, we got open gym down here in Oakland today if you want to play. I was in Sacramento, so I, you know, just happened to drive down, made that little push down to the Bay. Playing this open gym, play well, not knowing that Nelly was upstairs and watched us. So when we're done, Nelly comes down, puts his arm around me like, hey, you know, what do you got going on? Where are you going to camp at this year? I'm like, shit, I don't know. I don't have a job. And he's just like, okay, well, I can't promise you anything. You know, we got 16 guarantees already. We're going to invite a few people to come to camp just to fill out the roster. Like, I can't promise you a spot, but if you play like you play today, I'm going to give you a chance. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, shoot, this is the first time a coach has had that, like, enough time to even talk to me, really recognize me. But it almost sounded like, you know, he just gave me that little bit of confidence I needed. So I go into camp, do what I got to do. They end up cutting two dudes, cut the dudes they just brought to camp, and I make the team. So I start off on the bench and kind of work my way into playing and then playing a lot. And there was a little run there. I got hot. I had like 2 or 3 games in a row where I was over 20, if I'm not mistaken. And we come down in one city, and you know how much Nelly smoked. I didn't have a sweatshirt, and it was cold. Nelly tried to give me his dusty-ass jacket. It smelled like a pound of motherfucking cigars. Like, Matt, wear this shit.
A pound of Lucky.
I'm like, I'm cool, but he almost like bullied me into wearing it. You know what I mean? So I sat there and just wore his little nasty-ass little smoke jacket. But it was like right there. Like, this is the first time that a coach is like fucking with me and really giving me attention and showing that he believed in me. And that little bit of confidence was all I needed, you know? And then shortly after that is when you guys got traded to our team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew I had another smoking buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we made history in that 2.5 month span. But that's really after, you know, almost bouncing around for 4 to 5 seasons. That's where I knew I was like, okay. And, you know, that's when we made this We Believe run. You know, I'm starting to become a household name. you couldn't tell us that even though it was only the first round, we didn't win. Felt like we won the championship.
Nah, man.
You know, we was rock
Nelly
star.
Nelly did that for all
yeah,
of us.
We was
he
rock
made
star
us all
now.
Feel like we belong.
But you know what the crazy part was it was a bittersweet situation with Nelly because, and similar with you with Pop, like even though they really gave us our first opportunity.
They took it from us too.
They took it from us too. And people don't know, like my shit was fucked up. So I come off this We Believe season. So basically I was about to be out the NBA. Nelly gives me a chance, play well. So I started hearing, okay, hey, man, you about to get this 20, you know, $25, $30 million contract. You know, you need to get a bigger name agent. So I fire my agent. I'm just listening to all the hype. Fire my agent, whatever. Get a different agent. I heard there was a deal that he dropped the ball on. So then it comes back to where Nelly is offering me a three-year, $12 million deal. So I'm just thinking like, damn, that's low. You know how you was thinking
right.
Pop offered you the three-year, $9 million. I'm just like, after what I did and, you know, how that now I finally get a chance to play, like I know I could be making more. So I ultimately turned that deal down and the rest of free agency is getting watered down and the money's drying up. So then I end up taking a one-year, $4 million offer. Looking back on it after the fact, I saw it a lot clearly, but at the time, I'm just like, I'm looking at it as just give me this one-year deal. I'm going to audition, and then I'm going to get a big payday.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that that next season is when my mom dies right at the beginning of the season,
right.
That following the We Believe season, she dies, diagnosed with cancer November 1st, dies November 27th. So within the first 26 days of the season, my mom dies. So my season is shot. But what I remember was, you know, just trying to get that magic back. And you guys were there helping me, trying to gas me up and get me going. And, like, nothing was happening. So I remember I kind of started feeling better, was practicing better. Nelly pulls me to the side out in the back where he used to smoke in the parking lot and tells me straight to my face, I respected it, but I wanted to knock his old ass out. He said, I'm glad you didn't sign your long-term deal here. Your time here is up. And I'm like, hold up, motherfucker. I just battled through all this shit. You know my mom just died. I played the day after my mom died. And you got the motherfucking audacity to tell me that my time up is here. So, I mean, I'm just thinking all this shit in my head. I shook my head and said, okay. And that motherfucker stuck to his word. Didn't play me at all anymore. And that was kind of like the end of my run and my season. So although I owe a lot to Nelly initially, because he gave me my opportunity, he also snatched that shit right from underneath me too at the same time. And similar in your situation.
He traded me too though. It's just funny how he trades you though.
Yeah.
Knocked on my door in Milwaukee. Knocked on my door smoking a cigar with a beer early in the morning. Jack, how you doing this morning? Don't even come in my room. You don't want to be here. I'm going to send you to Charlotte, all right? Stay in touch, my boy. He gave me a hug and all right. That. Just walked off like
you were like you were like his favorite though.
That was
like,
my guy.
You negotiated your own contract with him.
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that.
Well, it wasn't with him. It was with Bobby.
Yeah,
I was had 2 years left on my contract. I think I'm probably the only person to negotiate a 3-year extension with no college education,
barely a high school education,
education. Did I get my diploma? Did I graduate high school? I did.
I'm gonna have to fact check.
You gotta look into that, yeah. But what was I talking about?
Getting your own contract. You worked your own contract.
So I take Bobby. Well, actually, shout out to Nita. Nita preps me. Mm-hmm. That's the homie.
Yeah,
she preps me. Because I didn't want to get no agent. She like, you know, Nita really believed in me, bro. Like, she helped me do a lot of stuff when I was there. And my mom and her are still good friends. But she's like, you don't need no agent. You can represent yourself. You know what you worth. Can't nobody tell you what you worth better than you. I'm like, it kind of makes sense, Nita. Like, all you got to do is show your numbers, your stats, and compare them to what everybody else making in their stats, and just see what he say. It's just a conversation. Take him to dinner. You know, we have a conversation. We're drinking a little bit, and I do exactly what she say, bro. Slide the stat sheet to him. All the players in my stats. I'm at the top. Mike Redd and all them. My stats killing theirs.
That's who you should have made
the
All-Star game.
They making dubs. Mm-hmm. They making 20. You know what I mean? I'm like, I just want 10. I just want 10 a year. I want 3 years, 30 million. That's all I want. You see what I'm doing? It's only fat. It's only right. I got 2 years left on my deal. So I'm just at the crap table shooting. You got it, Jack. You got it.
That was it.
Bro, I'm talking about, as soon as he said, I'm texting Nita. We got it on the phone. And I couldn't believe it, bro. But from what we done, for that year, I think we all deserve something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We had all deserve, and I was the last one there. Me and Monte.
Yeah.
We was the last ones, you know what I'm saying? And he saw how I was feeling with all y'all leaving. You know what I'm saying?
That's when Steph came in too, right?
Yeah, yes. That's when I told him I wanted to get traded right after when Steph came. And Monte didn't like it either. You know what I'm saying? But if I would have, my dumb ass, if I'd have known this Chef Curry, I would have stayed there and, you know what I'm saying?
Did whatever.
Fuck, I wish I would have known Chef Curry was going to be Chef Curry, bro. But shout out to Nita again, man. I was able to negotiate. I just had confidence to sit down with him and negotiate that contract. But the same GM, the Bobby that gave me my contract, lied on me too a year later to Monte.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and our relationship ain't been the same since. You know, years has passed. You know, we go back a lot to Golden State for the games. And somebody that still works in the organization told me that Bobby told him that I told him how he hurt his ankle.
Oh, how he was on this
moped. Mm-hmm.
Really?
When I left, Bobby told him that. And our relationship has never been the same.
That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, weak-ass Bobby. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit was weak. That shit was weak. He would do that because he was mad. Because I asked to get traded after I got the extension. So that was his way of getting. I'm like, that's bullshit.
You know what I mean? Would be a dope thing.
Shout out Monte. I love you, bro.
Little homie. Tony
that's
Ellis.
Our little brother. He didn't have no tattoos,
zero.
Nothing when we met.
That one night, we went to Sacramento, remember? We was up in there getting blowed, and I had my tattoo artist
he
come in and put that.
Nothing.
I had my tattoo artist tattoo this same tattoo in the same. Remember how much he was sweating when he was getting tattooed? We was in there drinking, smoking, laughing. He was in there sweating like a motherfucker. He came back the next season. More
whole
tattoos
body,
than all
legs,
of us.
Back, chest, everything. Like, bro, you just went in. He got more tattoos than all of us.
Young Monte. But, you know, I think what would be dope is the behind, like, stories like this. Like, our fans only get to see, you know, the finished product. So-and-so signs for this, so-and-so signs for that. They don't know the ins and outs of the other deals that failed, that the agents fuck up, that the GM lies on you. They cut you. They trade you. Like I said, they only see the bottom line on ESPN, so-and-so signed here. But I think it would be a dope if we can get, like, a collection of, like, crazy-ass cut stories, trade stories, contract fuck-ups, like, the real stories.
But since we own this, Golden State, we got to do the We Believe.
Oh, yeah, we definitely got to do the We Believe.
We get all us in here and talk about
Showtime,
those stories.
You got to fly me, Jack. Who else do we need to go?
Me, you, Monte, Al, Baron.
To Maui.
Jay Rich.
Jay Rich to Maui to sit down on Nelly's cannabis farm.
Maui Wowie. It's called Nelly Kush.
And we got to go out there and tell this We Believe story, man, because when we tell y'all legendary nights.
He invited us out. He wants us to come and try his product, and that'll be the perfect time to talk about old memories.
I love
to
try
him
products.
And Al have some stuff to hash
we
out,
can
too.
We hash it out. Yeah Al didn't Al. Like him. You know what I mean? Like it was a fallout with a couple of us. But like
wouldn't you be mad if he had you guarding y'all mean?
I was mad
he
as
had
fuck.
Al guarding all of
them. We was small ball. Al was our biggest dude.
He was our big man.
Like me and you were playing the 4 and 5 at the time. Like there's no way. We're 6'8". Like we found a way to slow down Dirk, but motherfucking y'all was 7 what?
It was a game where me and you was guarding Okur and Boozer.
Yeah.
At the 4 and 5, me and you.
Both them dudes outweigh us by 60 pounds. And we still had our own. That motherfucking refs cheated. Fuck y'all.
Y'all got to guard us too, though.
Straight up. All right, man, that's a wrap. Episode 7, All the Smoke.
Siete.
With my brother Jack. Man, stay tuned, man. We got a hell of a lineup coming for y'all in December. Got some NBA legends coming through and some other creative people in the space that we're really excited to bring you, man. So thank you for tuning in. Man, you can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube channel and all platforms streaming podcasts.
All of them.
How many?
All of them.
We'll see y'all later.
Peace.
Jamal Charlo says he wants to be the king of the jungle.
There's no way you can tame a lion.
And that's me.
And that's me. The power is for real. And the entire sport of boxing is here in Charlo's roar.
What?
He is the king of this jungle.
Jamal Charlo versus Dennis Hogan for the middleweight championship on Showtime.